When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest where in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought, come warm your buns in our oven. I'm Tommy Teves Pico. I'm a poet, an editor, and a sweet dream slash beautiful nightmare.
Oh, that is true. I am Joseph so Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, and no storm can break my inmost calm. Well, to this cock I cling.
Oh.
Dead air.
All of us were just like, what?
Boo books.
I'm Fran, a writer, editor, and you will find me at your local underwear party, fully clothed and eating cheese fries.
And I'm Dennis Norris II, reader, writer, former figure skater, and you heard it here first, a bench is moving to LA.
Ooh. Oh my God, truly though. It is so
nice. It could
nice
happen.
Here.
She just gonna miss her flight on Tuesday. I'm just gonna miss it.
Speaking of which, we are recording here in Los Angeles. Ooh. And like, honestly, like, it's my depression is reciting.
I can, like, all of the inner tensions in my body have just unclenched, I gotta tell you.
On the drive over here, Keith was like, oh my God, there's so much sky.
Dumbass sky.
Dumbass, big-ass sky. What do you gotta do with it? Fran, will you tell us what we got on the menu for this episode?
Absolutely. So, on the menu this week, we will be reading out loud the best and worst DMs that we've ever gotten. Tommy will share a salacious, impure thought story.
Heavens.
Oh my God, yeah, it's pearl clutching, you could say. And it's Valentine's Day, or almost Valentine's Day, so this episode will be all about love.
It's a love letter
or
to
lack
you.
Thereof. And for dessert, we talk about some beautiful things about what it is to be single.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, take it away.
Boom, bitch. We're going to start the top of this show the way any good top should, with a tease, our uproarious appetizer segment, Amuse Boosh. And to amuse our booshes today, Fran got a game for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys. It's Valentine's Day. We're all feeling a little gushy, so we wanted to honor...
It's nauseous, actually, is I
know,
how I feel. Like.
Exactly. And we wanted to honor this amazing holiday with the stupidest of Cupids, as you might say. So we're bringing back our scrumptious little segment wherein we read the absolute worst Grindr messages and affronting DMs that we get on social media that may or may not be romantically involved on our various dating apps. So, who wants to start?
Dennis Teeps. Got that smile like he wants to start God. Something.
Oh my God. Okay. So, here is a message that I got from a guy whose name on Grindr is Dirty Ass Eater.
Wow.
Go on.
Looking to eat, lick, suck, and worship a guy's dirty ass for as long as he wants. I don't top or bottom, no anal. Just enjoy sniffing stinky buttholes and rimming deep, in all caps.
I too, no anal.
I have a weakness.
Same, Fran, same. Yeah.
No anal. I have a weakness for 2+ days, ooh, unshowered ass.
Ooh.
Scat. Very big tongue here. Hit me up.
Wow. I find it really refreshing when men just state what they want.
Or
when,
yeah, with no shame.
What they want. Be the change you want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be the ass you want to eat, maybe.
Yeah, very Oprah, you know, just like... state what you want. Yep. Manifest it. It's the secret.
It's perfect because, you know, most people will say no, but some people will say yes.
You're not looking to play games.
Exactly.
If that's what you want, if you want to eat a dirty ass, you better tell people you want to eat a dirty ass.
People.
2 days plus.
Why not? That's special.
Teebs, do you have any?
I got a couple. One of them is a message that I got from somebody who asked me if I want to, would I want to put my feet in their face. People want that to happen. I'm not shaming that at all, but I was just like, no. And he was like, oh, what about your socks? Can I have your socks? And I was like, are you kidding? I run 30 miles a week. You got to pay for these socks. And he was like, how much for them? And I was like, like $150. And he was like, I'll take 2 pairs. And then I was like, well, when I see that shit in my PayPal, then I'll send you 2 pairs. And then like an hour later, I got a ding in my PayPal. $450, and I was like, oh
God.
And he had this specific instructions, you know, like as soon as you're done running, you put them in a Ziploc bag, you put them in a manila envelope and mail them to my office in the financial district.
And I
sent them every couple of weeks, and that pretty much supplemented my income for like 2015 2016.
You were writing your books.
This was
a writing fellowship, essentially.
I had a friend that paid for their entire trip to LA selling used panties on Craigslist.
I love it.
The thing is, I started to get like people. I was like, if you know other people in your freaky ass, you know, office that want some sweat socks, you know what I mean? I still run 30 miles a week, and I got a couple customers that way.
You still do it?
The thing is, like, it was in an effort to make money from my writing, and that is happening now. So there's no real need to, and I just kind of fell off.
So
the Dirty Sock Fellowship is now taking applications.
Oh, would you consider a middleman? Like, do you want me to be, can I be your agent?
Oh my God. Just take a 15 cut or what?
Let's talk 25.
Okay. Lost me. You were right until you were wrong. And then the second one was a DM that I actually sent somebody, because it was in this portion of my life where I was trying out pickup lines.
Oh, wow.
And I was
What's the difference, really?
But I was like, boy, are you institutionalized? Because you're crazy hot. And he was like, my mom just went to a mental institution.
And I was like, abort, 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 abort. I made a huge mistake. Unsend, unsend.
Yeah, incredible.
Oh, no.
I'm so impressed. Joe?
I have some good ones. My favorite is just like, we all know that this happens all the time, but, you know, like messages, like four of them, like 3 weeks apart, thumbs up emoji. Thumbs up emoji. Uh-huh. Thumbs up emoji.
Oh my God.
Thumbs up emoji. But the fans sent us the best ones. And one of my favorites was, this reminds me of you. This was a DM. This reminds me of you. And then it was an article, New York Times opinion, why women had better sex under socialism. Which just like, I felt deeply seen.
Such your brand.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Epic. And then another one on Insta this time. Joe! !! I had a wet dream about you last night. I just wanted you to know it was great and you looked great. So affirming.
Wow, that's really beautiful.
I will say
we get flirted with a lot in our DMs, and they are so affirming, so respectful, so encouraging.
Yeah.
A lot of people who listen to this podcast know that I actually don't use dating apps, and I am lucky enough where I don't get trolled or solicited that much. I mean, that's just like ideal. Like, men don't speak to me. Like,
you love people staying away from
you. I love that. Yeah, I mean, Dennis just said this morning, Dennis was like, yeah, ignoring people is like your love language. And I was like, true. I got a very non-romantic DM that from someone who lives in another state, very far away,
which is also your favorite.
Yeah, and they've followed each other on social media for a while, but I don't know him. I've never met him. And he DM'd me and he said, "Hey, a friend. Happy New Year. Heads up, this year, not right now, I want to have a serious conversation with you in which I'll be taking strong opposing devil's advocate viewpoints to what you think, meaning I may argue for things I don't even believe in or agree with, so
get ready
for
that." What race is this person?
He's white.
He's shocking no one.
He's so extremely white. And he was like talking about how like he's so concerned. He's like interested in talking about like race and dating with me and all this stuff. He's like, I've been churning on this for a while and I need the thoughts of a gay man of color to help me understand.
No.
I don't go perpetuating ignorance and hatred. And basically was just like, would love to know if you're down. Like, my intent is to understand the issues that I don't experience as a white dude.
And that's when you just respond with like, is direct deposit an option? Because like, you're going to have to pay me for that shit.
And here's the thing, because like, I do believe that we are in a current cultural moment.
Yeah.
We're in conversations like this should be facilitated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we should feel like safe enough to ask crazy questions.
Yep.
However, if you do not have one single person of color in your life, because of that, you have to reach out to someone thousands of miles away who you do not know and have never met to ask their opinion for a job that is not theirs.
You're not doing great.
And also, Google's open 24 hours a day.
Exactly.
Yeah, literally, Google is the one-stop shop. I was just like so baffled by that, because I have those conversations with my close friends. I'm willing to have those conversations and inexhaustively talk about it with close friends, which you don't have to do. You as a listener don't have to do, but I don't need to give that kind of time to people that I don't know.
It's also like you do that work on the show. Like, that's kind of what it is we do here.
Listen to the podcast. Mm. He's probably mad because it's like very one-sided, you know? He can't participate in the dialogue.
That is
so like, we should elevate more white voices. We should really try to bring it back in.
I really, this is Joe. I have to say that I do a lot of really embarrassing DM sliding myself.
I have some. Oh, my stars and garters, no way.
I mean, last night I just had a total meltdown on just a really hot boy who said that he wanted to go on a date with me and then didn't go on a date with me.
And then what happened, Joe?
And Fran was trying to make me unsend my Instagram DMs.
I didn't try. I succeeded.
It was just, and I woke up this morning being like, wow, I did a really bad job last night at that.
I usually have a consultation fee for that. Yeah. When I coach you into unsending.
It was not, I mean, I'm not proud of that, but like, you know, there's a really, really hot artist in New York, and I noticed he made a sad post on Instagram, but his Instagram DMs are not open. So I moved over to Facebook and I said, hi, noticed your sad girl Insta post, same TBH, sending hugs and blowjobs. And he messaged me back. It went really well. We're going to get a drink hopefully soon.
That is vulnerable and a boner thing. So it's a vulnerable. Can we say that? Can we say that?
I love you. I love you.
Wow.
I
absolutely also, fuck you.
I messaged a friend of mine. There was she's queer. There was a really cute boy on her Insta story, and I was like, oh my god, that boy is so cute, who is he? She was like, yeah, that's my brother, he's 17 and straight. Did not do a good job. Abort. She said I'll tell him you think he's cute. I was like, please don't.
With the median age of the people who you are currently sliding the DMs into,
they slide into mine. So just to everyone out there again whose DMs I have messily slid into, you know, friends of exes, like just people who are hot who I should not be talking to, I am so sorry. Drunk me is insufferable. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like so sloppy, slippery. It's like you were using baby oil, you know.
Our problem child. God. Well, yeah, that was great. Thanks, guys. For our next segment, we are doing Impure Thought, which is like one of our favorites here. It's kind of our signature, or at least one of them, because we just have so many signatures, you know? With this story, we will have an esteemed thought, share a salacious, ridiculous, redonkulous, cinematic, crazy, quintessential sex story. And for this week's Impure Thought, we have Tommy Team Speaker, the Los Angeles edition.
Which I gotta say that we're, you know, this is like the Valentine's Day episode, and this did happen in February of last year in LA, where we are currently recording from. So it seemed apt. And also, I haven't shared an Impure Thought story since I think the very first episode, which was my threesome one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I do have sex, FYI. So it's not because of a lack of stories. I'm just demurring. That's all.
Our PR teams are working harder on that. So there's general public beliefs.
If you call frottage through jeans sex,
And why not, if you're getting off?
If you get what you need.
So in 2012, I lived in Berlin. And during that time, I met a PYP, a pretty young poet. And there was like a lot of sort of will they, won't they action happening. It wasn't completely, it was a little call me by your name. But the thing is, like, he was really young, and I think he had just graduated from college, or maybe it was even the summer in between his junior and senior years. And I was, you know, in the throes of my Saturn return, so I was kind of messy. And it just, like, it felt like there was potential, but not a realization. You know, and that stuff happens all the time. You know, it's like ships passing in the night, or right person, wrong time. Like, a ton of factors go into coupling, which is why coupling is extremely frustrating. But then last year, I had a reading at the Standard in downtown LA. And we had continued to sort of follow each other on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that, like staying in touch, but never completely in touch.
I love the social media because it allows you to like play the real long game. It's like a lot of these are not people you text with or whatever, but like they are just enough in your periphery that when you end up in their city and they see you post from LA, they're like, hey.
Yeah, it is a long con situation.
It is.
And what happened was he was like, you know, it's been a really long time. I'd love to take you out to like buy you lunch or something like that. Do you have time while you're here? And I was like, oh, absolutely. You know, Kevin or James or whatever his name was. And so we met at a diner and we were talking and we were, you know, and I was sort of catching him up on my life, and he had, you know, kind of fallen off of poetry a little bit. So he was a little starry eyed when we were talking, because it was like, I think for him, it was like an idealized career path that like I was here in a reading.
You
I
had still two doing books it.
That. Yeah. And that like, I, you know, it was like a thing about perseverance. And so I just saw these googly eyes and we started talking about like, oh, do you want to get get a drink later. And I was like, you know what's my favorite genre of bar is like the hotel bar. And he was like, why don't we go to the Line Hotel?
Really good. Teams, how do you feel about the ethics of sleeping with people who are googly-eyed or starry-eyed about you because of your writing? Is it like, does that, because that can lead people into your bedroom. And is that chill?
Ethics? I don't, ethics or like, I'm just curious if you even dig that. Is that something you're into?
It depends. I'll tell you why I was into it. I'm not always into it, but I can be led. My opinions are not concrete. They're not stone. I am malleable. I am, maybe you might say, the shape of water. So we get to this Line Hotel, and we're sitting there, and he's like, you know, I just got to say, we haven't really addressed this, but I feel like a few years ago, we had an opportunity to do something. And I really, I feel like, I didn't own the moment, and I don't want to let that opportunity pass by twice. And that kind of speech, that's what got me. I was like, oh, okay, this is really mature. And like, you actually said what you felt, which is something that's actually really hard for a lot of people to do.
Emotional vulnerability is so sexy. Yeah. Just put it out there.
Because like, knowing how you feel is hard, right? Mm-hmm. And articulating that to someone is hard, especially if they could give it to you or won't.
Or won't, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, absolutely, let's do this. Let's go back to your place. And he's like, actually, we can't go back to my place because I live with my girlfriend.
Yes.
And he was like, but I'll get us a night here at the Line Hotel.
Shut the up.
And if you do not know, Line Hotel is like anywhere between $200 and $450 a night. Like, it's so nice. Oh, it's so expensive.
And I didn't sign the dotted line, so I have no idea.
Yeah.
But so then we get up to that, and it's like so hot, and we're like making out, and I'm just like, oh my God. Like, I suddenly understood what love songs meant. You know, I was like, this is great. I hear a symphony. I literally do. So, but then when we get to the actual fucking, it is such a goddamn disappointment.
Wow.
First of all, even though I was the receptive partner, I felt like a dildo because it didn't feel like he was actually not interested in getting me off at all. He was the one who wanted to get off. And I love getting people off, so like I was participating in it, but at a certain point I was like, I don't even have to be here for this,
right?
And also, you know, we've maybe talked about this before, but you know, there is a way that you handle an uncut penis.
Yes. if you
bore down too hard on it, becomes insensitive and it hurts.
Yeah.
And I was I was like just having not a good time, and I was like, is this how you fuck women? Like, you do not care about the other person getting off at all. Like, this is a crime. Is it a crime? Sade asks. Yes, it is. And so then, the moment is completely unsexy, and all of that Vaseline on that lens got wiped completely off. And he was like, so I'm going to go home now, but, like, you are free to stay in the hotel if you want to. And I was like, oh, absolutely. So then I took a bath, I got in my robe, I ordered a cheeseburger, a pitcher of Mai Tais, and I watched Insecure night long.
Oh my God. And whose bill did you put all of that shit on?
On Henry or James or whoever. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't put that on your own bill. No.
What I'm so shocked that nothing in his, from what you said about his emotional vulnerability and the way he was drawing you into the room, I felt like the sex was going to be good because that seems like someone who would actually care. Mm-hmm. And especially his googly eyes towards you. It's like, was there a red flag? Wasn't there something being like, oh, this person's going to be shitty at sex?
You never know when somebody's going to be shitty at sex, first of all, because like the sexiest person sometimes you can look at somebody and be like, I know how you fuck. And then it's like, it sucks. Or like sometimes it's that nerd and the red light comes on and they're like, hello.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love
so
that.
True.
Yeah.
So true.
I guess what I would say is like, what I didn't realize at the time was that it was maybe a kind of a fetish or something like that. Like,
a fame fetish.
Yeah. Or like a career fetish or just like a memory fetish. You know, like when you run around a story in your head long enough of like a will they, won't they, or could this have been, and you miss the opportunity, and the opportunity comes again. It was just like, I am a factor of your fantasy, but me as a human being am not. And I guess that's what I would say with people who might know you from writing or from something else is like, they don't actually know who you are.
They don't.
They know you via like a medium that they are encountering that has nothing to do with you really.
Wow.
Yeah, he fucked you like that was something that he had to do for him, like to fulfill whatever, and that's like all it was.
Do you think it was good for him, or did you get the sense that he also was just?
I got him off so hard.
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
He was like,
it just sounds like he's being violently shaken,
which is what an orgasm looks like sometimes. And he's like, "Oh, my head is all electric," and I was like, "That's what I do to people." Boo. And on that,
this has been an advertisement for sex with Teebs,
and we're out. For our next segment, the meat of our conversation, the thought process, spelled T-H-O-T. Joe's going to intro this one.
Yeah, so you guys, this week is the worst. For one, we're still not even in Pisces season. And secondly, Valentine's Day looms. Valentine's Day dates back to the 3rd century AD to Roman festivals of love that involved men sacrificing animals and then, truthfully, hitting women with animal hides. In that century, two men named Valentine were executed on February 14th by the Roman Emperor Claudius II.
So romantic.
And the Catholic Church would later erase, not surprisingly, the pagan festivals to make the day high and holy. Valentine's Day seems to make me sad, even when I'm in a relationship. If I have a man, why not a house? Why not a savings account? Why not some kids? My love never seems to match up to what I think it should be, and Valentine's Day reminds me of this endlessly. I find that movies and songs build up this type of love that real life cannot match. Fuck you, this is us. But, maybe more than other bitches on this panel, I do believe in love. Love has taught me and transformed me, and of course I believe that love... it's a wide-ass motherfucking category that includes familial relationships and close friendships. Love requires vulnerability and accountability.
Ooh.
Love undoes me, and being undone is necessary for growth. So we call ourselves Thoughts on the show. We know we're capable of being slutty, slutty sluts. But Thoughts, what do you love? And who do you love?
Judy Garland movies. Oh my God. I truly love them. They make me feel connected to the world. This is just a funny topic for me. And I feel like, you know, we do a lot of preparing to come into these shows.
Yeah.
Like if you don't already know as a listener, like we prepare for hours and hours, just like deep diving into the subject matter. And this is like the most out of my league I felt on a topic.
Mm.
I truly felt, I have never been in love personally. I feel like I've gotten close, but I don't really know how to pinpoint that.
Yeah.
And talking about it is just not something that I'm privy to. And I think that's because we kind of convene the word love to mean so much more than it needs to be. And it's kind of that stupid cliche that's like, oh, like there's so many different ways that we could say love,
right?
And there should be more words for like love, and like what's there's like a language where, and there's like 45 different, you know, words for like what love is or something like that. But I feel like with this, I do feel that problem that the word love has too much cultural weight to
oh,
it.
Wow. You say it all the time. Oh, I love this. I love you. I feel like it's overused, frankly. It's rubbed
absolutely.
Dry. It's like, it's numb.
Yeah. But, and it's, sorry.
My question for you, Fran, is for you, it seems like you don't find the lack of romantic love in your life a deficiency. And that's really important.
Well, you know what's funny is I don't find the lack of romantic love a deficiency. I find it something that I'm working toward. Working toward figuring out what love is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like that's something that I'm not such an evil monster where like I don't believe in love and it's not something that I want, because
okay.
I do want that.
Wow.
And I do want to, and when I do, you know, when, especially when we're surrounded by people that are falling in love and people that are in relationships, it's something that makes me want it too.
Wow.
But it's definitely not, it's never, ever, ever my priority, and has, I can't remember if it's ever been a priority in my life after my first boyfriend.
And to quote the illustrious Mariah Carey, she had a vision of love, right? And so I think about that a lot, actually, because I've had a vision of what I wanted to be in
right.
my life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting with a friend in Williamsburg in like 2006, 2007, being like, I think I'm going to try to make this poet thing happen. Mm-hmm. So I had a vision for my career. I have a vision for the types of friendships that I want. You know what I mean? Like I have a vision for the sometimes the places that I want to live,
mm-hmm.
but a vision of love, I just don't have.
Wow.
I don't know what that
me
looks
too.
Like. I don't
that
know what
that
looks
like. That
was
the problem
like.
That like I had preparing for this episode. I didn't know how to concretize it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe no one does, but like I personally like had a really hard time figuring out how to even talk about it because it's so amorphous.
I'm so different from everybody here. Dennis?
I feel very similar to both Fran and Tommy in that I don't have, like, I feel like because I grew up in this like religious home with a very sort of traditional nuclear family with older siblings and a two-parent household for a long time, I have like thought that was what I needed to be working towards. But the thing is, as you, like for me, as I've been in my 20s and now my early 30s, and I've experienced so many different kinds of love, and I don't know that I've experienced like real romantic love, but like Fran, I feel like I've come close a few times and I have a lot of loving relationships like with my friends, and I have a very loving relationship with my family. I feel like for me, I don't have a vision of like what love is. I just know that it exists in my life. I know that I want to have more of it, however that looks. But like romantic love is not my number one priority either. Like loving myself is my number one priority. And that's You have to fight just to do that.
This message comes from iHeartRadio sponsor, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should really think about getting a quote from Mercury, because Californians save an average of $677 with Mercury. It's quick and easy, and in just a few minutes, you might find you could save a lot of money on your auto and home insurance. Plus, Mercury was named one of America's best insurance companies by Insure.com 4 years in a row. Low rates, big discounts, great insurance. Go to MercuryInsurance.com today to get a quote.
It's crazy how much we have to pay for outdated, impersonal healthcare, and even crazier that we all just accept it. It's time to face facts. Healthcare is backwards. Luckily, there's Forward, a new approach to primary care that's surprisingly personal and refreshingly straightforward. Forward never makes you feel like just another patient. Backed by top-rated doctors and the latest tech, Forward gives you access to personalized care whenever you need it. Using in-depth genetic analysis and real-time blood work, Forward's top-rated doctors provide you with in-depth insights to better understand your genetics, mental, and physical health. They then create custom, easy-to-understand plans to help guide you to achieving long-term health. With Forward, you get unlimited in-person visits with your doctor and access to care anytime via the Forward app, all for one flat monthly fee. It's time to stop accepting backwards healthcare and start moving your health forward. Visit GoForward.com today to learn more. That's GoForward.com.
Sticky notes, email alerts, a string around your finger. They're just not big enough.
So here's a big reminder from the California Lottery. Tonight's Mega Millions jackpot is over 350 million.
Whew.
Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player client.
Hey, I'm Gabrielle Collins, period drama nerd, and your behind-the-scenes guide to Bridgerton. On Bridgerton, the official podcast, we're learning how this fantasy world dipped in history came to life.
Daphne, her costume design really is about the elegance of simplicity. It's just color and shape.
We went old school and we got two scenic artists in who painted the backings for us by hand.
These dukes are all like in their late 20s, early 30s. Almost all of them are unmarried, really good looking. And none of them have syphilis.
Can you imagine when he looks into your eyes and then he dips you?
We just heard this sort of ripping sound. Yep, I think there's just been a wardrobe malfunction.
Listen to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your favorite shows.
Mm-hmm. Like, every goddamn day.
True.
So
I almost feel sort of ruined by having had my soulmate and the love of my life as my first partner. And she was my first mm-hmm. girlfriend, and I was like 20 and she was like a year or two younger. And that love was a reckoning and a growing up. And it wasn't that like my different relationships have looked really different from one another, but sort of that, feeling like I feel like the person teaches me something like every day. Like I want to be the best version of myself for that person. Like feeling like I have to grow as a person intellectually, spiritually in order to like match up with where that person's at. Like it can look like so many different things, but it's such a concrete feeling to me. This just like intense connection. It like for me, it is like one of the main things that's made me grow and grow up. So like the whole sort of RuPaul's, you know, how can you love somebody else if you don't love yourself thing? I think that for me, like, learning how to love other people has also taught me how to love myself better.
But this is where I will agree with RuPaul. I think it's my suspicion anyway. I have a hunch that if you don't love yourself, you will be suspicious of somebody else loving you.
Wow. I think that's completely 100% on point.
And I do think that's, you know, to dive into this, I do feel that there is also, even though that it RuPaul's, you know, aphorism is really beautiful, there is a little bit of a fallacy in that, like, you don't have to be, I'm not someone who is extremely mentally stable. Like, I'm depressed. I have an anxiety disorder. I deal with a lot of mental health issues in my day to day, but I'm seeking help. But I'm getting help with it, especially with like my friends and the way I work through it every day, very cognitively with a lot of interiority. That said, I don't necessarily feel like I need to be 100% stable in order to enter a relationship,
absolutely
and
not.
Other people shouldn't feel that way. But I I do feel like when it comes to like mental health, you do want to be kind of good, mm-hmm. you know, there's no like way to like actually evaluate like how good you need to be. But like, if you are someone who is really, really in a bad place, I would not say being in a relationship.
It is unhealthy to expect that a relationship will fix you. If you feel broken, that brokenness cannot be like filled up by love of another person.
And
right?
do you think that, and this is Tommy, do you think that that adds a particular dimension on queerness? Because we kind of grow up broken and not right. having our attractions affirmed to us.
And feeling unlovable because of our attraction to other bodies.
And
right?
not having like a same, like how often do you have a model of queerness, like a queer relationship to know what that looks like, to have the vision, you have had to have some inkling of it. I mean, I don't have a good model for a relationship because my parents were horrible to each other. But then also like it was so out of, it seemed beyond the pale.
Yeah,
to actually be with somebody when I was younger, to think that that would that could actually happen for me.
That you could receive love. It felt impossible to receive love.
From a partner of the same sex,
Of course.
Because there's so many more, there's just so many more barriers to that relationship happening, especially when you're at that age and you're just kind of hitting some of those barriers, like the idea of like figuring out who you are, figuring out how you're going to live your life, and like if you're going to let people in and let people know about that, like the whole closet versus not closet thing, like this shit that like straight people don't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And when you're 18, 19, you're dealing with that, and you know that the people around you are dealing with that, so it's so much harder to conceive of that. I completely empathize with you, and I always felt like I looked at that, like that happy ending, as like the golden calf that we were always working towards. Yeah. And I resent the idea that we live in a society where we always privilege that over everything else. And I also resent the idea that there are often people, sometimes straight people, sometimes queer people, who move through the world always asking you to make a lot of extra room for their relationships. Like, even when you don't have, like, even if you don't have one.
Getting invited to somebody's motherfucking wedding.
See,
that's my favorite thing. I love weddings.
Because the thing is, you have to spend so much money to go celebrate someone else's union.
Friend
and, like,
loves it.
It's like they're every, like, I have some friends where I'm super excited for them, and like I know if I know that like that's the thing that they have wanted and they're getting it, then I'm like really, really happy for them. But weddings, man, going to weddings is very, very tough on me. Like,
It's emotionally hard.
Emotionally, it's very, very difficult.
Weddings are so, that's so weird, and it's weird that I feel this way, but weddings are so life-giving for me. But I love, I love celebrating with friends and family, though, and I love parties.
I think one thing that, I also love parties, this is Joe, but I think one thing that has me fucked up about relationships is just the notion that they arrive, that, like you were talking about in adulthood, Fran, that there's a crystallizing thing. And I actually think queerness really has helped me reframe this. If you think about like Jose Esteban Muniz's idea of like queer utopity, like queer utopia sort of like an ever arriving horizon, it's like you're walking towards, and that like inviting someone into that and like learning and growing with them, but never you never feel like you're gonna arrive at the thing. But it is scary.
It's scary because you know that comes with the that perhaps not the expectation, but there is a reality that you grow together and you grow apart.
Oh, absolutely. And allowing space to grow apart without breaking the relationship is super important. But it is just scary as fuck to be vulnerable with other human beings. I mean, I was in a very serious relationship. I thought it was sort of, I had arrived at that horizon. I thought that I had found this person who was going to share that journey with me, someone with whom I grew immensely. And then they bounced, you know? And like, I, for the first time in my life, this is Joe, feel like I can't open myself to other people. And that's so scary. It's like, I'm a person who opens myself to other people. That's what the fuck I do. And I just feel so broken by this.
And like
this.
I said to you yesterday, though, like, first of all, it would be pathological if you felt like right away you were ready to do that whole thing over
again. It sure would.
Yes. Oh. And also, like, any type of belief system, it's replete with crises of faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
And if you don't have one of those, how do you know what you give a fuck about?
But even in the relationship, you have crises of faith. You just decide you're going to push through them together. I mean, that's what a relationship is. It's like, it's people who like think it's not going to work, but still somehow manage. And I think one thing that has me fucked up also is that my parents didn't let me into the messiness of their marriage. I know that it exists, and I know that it exists now, but like my parents had that sort of, I mean, we were poor as fuck, but they had that sort of like white nuclear mentality of like, we don't fight in front of the kids. We don't show, you know, the conflict. And I think that that's super healthy in some ways,
that's
but
where his
also
like wisps of waspiness come from.
Oh,
that's
my wisp of waspiness.
You have, Dee and I were talking about it last night.
Yeah. There are certain moments where we're like, like, ho is hella waspy right now.
Yep.
Like,
yep. To touch on something you said earlier, I mean, Tommy and I were just talking this morning about how, like, one of my number one pet peeves is, and I say this facetiously and also not, is, like, having to admit that I care about someone.
Yeah.
Like, that. I really hate that. And I don't hate it. It's just really difficult for me.
I mean, it makes you vulnerable, Frank.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, ignoring people is my love language. And I do, the way I, my friends will say, like, the way I convey love is, like, once you get to know me and once you've spent time with me is very clear. Like, you know,
you're very
you
know what I love. You fight for the people
very,
you love.
You really do. And very and generous. That,
but I don't, I'm not a words of affirmation person.
Wow. But also sex makes it different for you. I feel like sex is a layer of, it adds vulnerability to a relationship and that makes you sort of even more closed.
You know, what's funny is that relationships make me bonkers. Like, a lot of my friends haven't really seen me in relationships because I'm not in very many of them. But
when you're like, boom.
Like, I'm all the way. Like, I'm waiting on their text messages. Like, I'm like kind of getting crazy about them. I'm thinking about like what they're doing and like what, where they are and like whether they think a thing I'm doing is okay.
Texting makes relationships so hard.
Texting it makes it so hard. But that
everyone's
that
expectations for texting are different.
Yeah. That Dennis. Makes perfect. I'm just saying that makes perfect sense for you because I feel like so much of your life outside of that is like trying very hard to not be that person. Mm-hmm. Because you know, you see in yourself that when the situation arises, you can become that person. Right. And you hate being that person.
I
sometimes.
Hate it.
Like, I hate being that person, and I do get like
I
that.
I love
and
being that person.
Because it makes me feel completely unhinged. Yeah. And I just can't, like, move through my life like that.
What's that? I can't remember. It's like a Greta Gerwig movie where they're like, oh, like, there's two people in a relationship. There's a rose and there's a gardener. And, like, you can, like, take turns. But, like, for more often than not, there's one person taking care of the other person. And I, like, hate being the one who caters to the other person.
Oh, really?
Same. Yeah. Same.
It's funny because I do like taking care of people. Like,
you care for people so much, Fran.
I hate both of those things. I hate being taken care of and I hate taking care of other people. That's
not the rose or the garden. You're just like the dirt.
Yeah, I'm the dirt.
Tommy is the dirt. Oh,
I'm
my God.
I'm the pinking shears. Like, I'm just cutting everything.
And then getting on an airplane.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe, I am really envious. I'm really envious of the fact that your first relationship was so, I don't know if healthy is the word for it.
It was the healthiest relationship of my life.
That, no, I didn't know. I didn't know because I don't know what the context of your relationship was, but like mine was really bad.
I also wonder really if abusive. The fact that it was with a woman sort of made it easier for me.
Absolutely.
It's like I was out to her as queer during the relationship, but I kind of, and it's funny because I put up with a lot of bullshit in some other relationships, but I thought at the time, I was like, this good relationship will teach me to not have bad relationships and then turn around and have like several bad relationships in a row. But I mean, it truly, the woman I would date, she really is my soulmate. She came here to LA.
I love her.
For the show. Like, she's just still a family member. I've spent the last 12 Thanksgivings with her, including from when we were together to when we broke up. And it just, like, it did teach me. I mean, I just grew up as a human being with her. And I've known her for so long. My love for her is so deep. We have inside jokes, like those inside jokes that go back to like literally 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's just so nice to be so seen. Like, she knows, but like, she knows all the good and the bad about me, but I love that. Like, I love that.
But that takes time.
Oh my God.
So you know? Much time.
And I wish I could get there quicker, but you can't. The only way you know somebody 10 years is by knowing them 10 years.
But don't you think romantic and sexual relationships accelerate that?
I think they can if that's what you're looking for. But I also feel completely paralyzed by them.
Wow.
When I actually give a fuck about somebody, I feel so completely paralyzed. I feel like so self-monitoring. Like, the way that I exist best in the world is if I don't give a fuck, the stakes are very low, and I just am who I am. So when I actually give a fuck about somebody, I feel like I'm constantly holding my breath.
Wow, Teebs. Wow, 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 wow.
That's very...
And I almost don't feel free unless I care. I actually feel very anxious if I'm like around a bunch of people that I don't care about. It's just like, I feel unsettled.
Something that you said about like the way we accelerate getting to know each other through relationships kind of struck me. And I'm more of a consumer of movies than I am of books. And I read a lot of books, but I get all of my representations, cultural forms and things that I like go back to tend to be from movies and TV. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like the medium of films makes us believe that relationships happen really fast.
Yeah.
We're like, I feel like books can do a better job of helping you see how they grow and see their isms and like see what they're into and how you kind of get used to each other because books take more
time. They take more time, yeah.
I don't know if that's like a really essentializing thing to say, but like what are your guys' like favorite, can you think of like a relationship in films or in books where like you were like, that make that version of the relationship makes a lot of sense to me, or you just mm-hmm. found it really striking or poignant.
Probably like the yeah. Scream movies. Striking, poignant, sharp.
Oh my god, that's so real.
I can think of a couple. I mean, first off, I feel like my dream boyfriend would actually be like a house elf from Harry Potter, because they just like putter around serving you all the time and you never even have to see them or deal with them or talk to them. And that's like amazing to me.
Living nightmare.
But actually, there's this movie that I have seen once, and I can only watch it one time because it kind of deeply disturbed me, as is what it's supposed to do. But it's called Lars and the Real Girl, and it stars
Ryan Gosling.
Thank you, Ryan Gosling. I had Ryan Phillippe in my head. And the premise is that he's this like super like awkward, super shy, introverted guy living in a small town with his family.
Not
and he and they're all worried about his social skills and his social life. And eventually he says, "Oh, I have a girlfriend," and he introduces his family to the girlfriend, and she's a blow-up doll. And everyone is like, "Oh my god, is he having a psychotic break? What's happening?" Like, people are meeting with a psychiatrist and they're just like, "You just need to ride this out and like follow this delusion with him." And so the whole length, I don't remember how the movie ends, but the whole length of this movie is basically like him living and treating this like blow-up doll as though it's a real person and like a real relationship. And so he'll like go to a dinner party and all the guests there are like shake her hand and talk to her like she's a real person. Mm. And the thing that really like was so wild for me about seeing this was that I felt
like white privilege.
First of all, there maybe was one black person in the movie. I mean, I don't know. They're in like Minnesota or something. But the thing about it that was so wild to me is that it harkens back to this idea that I have about that comes from my writing experience and my reading experience, which is just that ultimately to me, we are alone in the world. Like, that's part of what makes relationships seem like a fallacy to me, even though I love relationships, is this idea that no matter how close we are to someone, like they can't know us fully and we can't know them fully and we can't like be in each other's heads. And so there's always a distance and there's always a barrier. And I felt like this movie was a really great metaphor for that. And that's one of the things that I love so much about reading and writing, is because that's my opportunity to be in someone else's head or theoretically to feel like there's someone else in mine.
That reminds me of the movie Her, where it's just like, it's the same kind of lesson where it's like, does the if the partner isn't actually real, but the relationship is real, does that make it less real?
Yeah. There's a line in Hilton Ells' book, The Women's, that says that the fundamental difference between people is whether or not we believe that other relationships with other people can cure our fundamental human loneliness. And I am definitely a person who does feel cured of like existential loneliness by being around people. And he was basically arguing that he and his mother kind of don't.
Like, yeah. See, to me, that feels like it feels like a Band-Aid. And it sort of feels like we can
I
do this thing
though.
And
so good.
We can do this thing and we can be happy and we can feel all these amazing feelings. And that's all well and good. But to me, I just go back to the idea that like when we are born alone, although I guess that's debatable because you come out of your mother, but we're born alone and we die alone.
Dennis,
and
do you think that might have to do with losing your father, though?
Maybe.
That you like you had your stable family unit kind of like was so disrupted so early in your life.
But I think that like, I mean, I thought of that idea a lot before that. And even though I'm not entirely sure that I understand the connection, I think that a lot of it just maybe comes from the biblical teachings that I was raised on and my understanding of the Bible, that the only person who could really save you was like Jesus.
Oh, right.
And it, and it wasn't even anything earthly. And in my head, that sort of includes relationships.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, and plus, I mean, I was already encountering that idea in literature, but I do think, because my parents had this really epic, beautiful, amazing, romantic marriage where like new people could meet them 40 years into their marriage. They were married for 44 years and people just like, wow, they are so clearly like in love with each other. Like they're the people that I think of when I want to not believe that soulmates exist. And I think of my parents and I'm like, oh, I know that it does. And so that's like really important for me. And so I do think that that may play a part in it, because then it's sort of like, well, who finds that? Like almost no one finds that. So then I'm like, well, what can I do? I can just hope for something that feels amazing and that feels incredible, and I can feel like someone knows me better than anyone else, and that can be real. And still, to me, there's just a barrier because we're human.
One thing that the thoughts all do that I love is y'all don't put up with bullshit. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't sit in
truly
relationships that like that
truly
don't
do
feel
not.
Good.
I just call it when I call it. There's something now as we're talking about it. There's something where in the cubbyhole that I would usually keep love in is empty for me.
Wow.
Because I feel like my parents' relationships were with me were not, were loving, but then upon coming out became a completely different thing. And then I was like, oh, so like, it's not love. Is it love if you want to be
It's conditional.
And the same thing as the love of Christ is similar, you know.
The difference between infatuation and love is one of them conditional and the other one isn't.
No, I think infatuation just wears off, right? Love is like a sustainable infatuation. I don't find infatuation conditional, personally, me. Like, if I'm infatuated with someone, it does not go away. Mm. It's not like, oh, I saw them fart and then I don't want to fuck them anymore.
Wow. So that becomes a part of the love for you is infatuation. Whereas I'm asking, because in my head, it feels like love is when the infatuation wears off. And that doesn't mean you're not excited about that person and turned on by that person and like you want to spend all your time with that person if that's like what it is. But there's an electricity to infatuation that I feel like, how can that possibly
That's how I feel when I eat breakfast burritos. I'm just like, oh my God. It's electric.
Today.
It's just like an immediate connection,
Speaking
you know?
Speaking about conditions, could you date somebody who wore transition lenses?
Oh my God. That is a deal breaker.
Truly.
A deal breaker.
Okay. I feel like a person who wears transition lenses they'll feel really far away to me. I don't know if I'll be able to connect with that person. And that's I don't know if that's a lot of shade. It's just very different for me.
Could you date somebody who waxed his handlebar mustache?
No.
Maybe.
Handlebar mustache. Fran has a handlebar mustache.
I'll fuck off. I would never wax my mustache if you paid me.
Could you date somebody who picked his teeth with his Metro card?
Yes, easily.
No, ew. The Metro card is one of the dirtiest objects you carry.
Hi, this is Joe O, the science ho. Dirt
but
is good
who,
for you.
But who
your
does
immune system
that?
Needs it.
That's... There's a thing that has been invented
okay, go
to do
eat
that.
Dirt then, Joe.
I don't understand. Like, how would you... anyway. I mean, if somebody did it one time in a very stressful moment and they didn't have anything, I can forgive it.
No, but...
Could you date somebody who rode a unicycle?
No.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. That's so cool. I'm so excited by that.
Dennis is going to get.
Who can ride a unicycle? Yes.
I can tolerate a lot of weird hobbies, but not that one.
Dennis is going to get DM slides from unicyclers worldwide.
Please slide in
with your unicycle.
You ride your unicycle
cycle
and I will
in.
Ride you.
Oh no.
Wow. I've one last one in. Could you date somebody who actively referred to his penis as his crank?
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably.
I got hard.
In earnest?
Yeah.
No.
Could you?
If it was
oh,
a joke.
Babe, my crank's so hard right now.
We were, oh, God. Then when you say that, I mean, like,
well, it's better than,
no,
better
I'm still
than,
hard. I'm
better
still
than
hard.
Baby arm dick. Okay, that's gross.
Dennis?
I love baby. That's
stupid.
I meant to.
What if he referred to your ass as the Big Easy?
Yes, done. I'm getting harder and harder.
Actually,
yes. I'm getting jizz in my pants right now.
I don't see any falsehood, and so...
Could you date someone who likes Ayn Rand or, you know, and could you date someone who's terrible?
There...
not everyone who likes Ayn Rand is terrible.
Dennis? Dennis
is like, I love Ayn
Rand.
I
do not love Ayn Rand. Well, I haven't read Ayn Rand, please. But I have a very close friend who is a big fan of one of her novels. So, and she's
Dennis.
Like,
why
a great
are we
person,
always talking about Ayn Rand on this podcast?
Because it's very polarizing. It's a litmus test.
It is a litmus
because
test.
I could sleep with Paul Ryan.
On that topic, I do think that...
Fran, you missed it. You missed it.
That's, yeah.
We
that's
don't need to unpack. I wonder whether on that note, when have you guys dated terrible people? What did that mean for you? And by terrible, that doesn't necessarily have to be like superficial things like what their hobbies are, but it could also be like someone who was fundamentally just completely different from the person that you are in terms of like their ethics and like how they.
I think it was probably like this is Tommy. The times that has happened, it's not something that was immediately apparent to me.
Exactly.
It was gradual, and I didn't, and so I had time to form an attachment, that's what made it hard to leave.
Yeah. I mean, same.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like my cheating ex, but like I was already attached by the time I realized how I wouldn't say terrible he was, but terrible we were for each other. We were dysfunctional for each other. But my problem, again, Joe, is that once I'm attached to people, I sort of feel like an umbilical cord is between our bodies, and I have a really hard time cutting that off.
Well, I'm the pinking shears, so
snip, snip,
right
snip,
off.
Snip, bench.
As we were talking about love and literature, do you think you need to be in love to write about love?
Ooh.
No. Mm-mm. I don't. No. Because even though I am not totally sure that, like, I don't think I've ever really been in love, and I guess if you say that means that you haven't. I just think, again, there's so many different kinds of love in the world that you can pull you can pull from those experiences and I think write about love in a very beautiful and convincing way.
But then that would mean that either your imagination would have to do, you know, double duty, yeah, or love is something that you could recognize. So if love is something that you can recognize, yeah, between, yes, people, how can you not have a vision for it for yourself?
Exactly. And I think that sometimes the best art is made about longing, though. It's like people write, yeah, about love because they're longing for love. Yeah. I write about family a lot because I'm longing for family and I don't really
or
feel.
Or trying to get over.
Yeah.
Or,
oh, word.
I,
yes, yes, yes.
I can,
yes,
very,
yes,
honestly say that the marriage that is at the center of the novel that I'm working on, when I started it, was what I was longing for.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what I wanted my future to be, right, yeah, down to the fact that the man that my protagonist, who's a lot like me, is married to, was the man who at that time in my life was like the dream,
oh my God,
man,
it's,
for me.
It's like Dennis,
absolutely.
It's like Dennis and the Real Boy. Your novel is like, oh, it's like, God, the Lars and the Real. It's like you're right. You're writing the man that doesn't exist.
I could see Dennis toting around a blow up doll. I could.
With the biggest,
has a blow
with the biggest baby arm dick on the face of the planet.
Listen. I'm curious, Fran, about like the submissions that you get for Hello Mister. What proportion of them do you think regard romantic love?
Okay, I would say like 75 to 80% of the things that I get in my inbox revolve around some conceit of gay queer heartbreak.
Heartbreak, not just love, heartbreak.
Heartbreak,
loss.
Heartbreak, loss. The number of emails that I get that are like, I just got out of this relationship. Like, I literally just broke up with this person, or this person just broke up with me, and here's my thing about it. Mm. People see Hello Mister, and for good reason, people see Hello Mister as an outlet within their catharsis can take place. Wow. And it's almost always never a good fit. It's almost always they're too within that moment, or mm-hmm, too vulnerable or raw, or it's too insular to actually be content. But
you haven't figured out the metaphor or the artifice or the right, decontextualizing.
But as an editor, I do feel really grateful that mm-hmm, they would share those stories, yeah, with me, because, yeah, more often than not, they are really heartbreaking.
Is queer heartbreak harder than straight heartbreak?
I don't necessarily feel like it's harder, but I think that the stakes feel higher because we have so few representations for queer heartbreak in our mainstream.
That's
that's why Hello Mister was founded.
That's right. So true.
The editor-in-chief Ryan Fitzgibbon was like, I am turning to the out and advocate and all these different outlets, and I don't see I just got out of a relationship. Yeah. I don't see myself reflected. I don't see these stories about queer heartbreak, and I want to know where that
we
is.
We see so few queer relationships, and then the queer relationships that we see are always sort of vaulted as like this ideal to work towards, and we don't see the queer hurt that much. We're kind of not allowed that in the public eye. It's like we're not allowed to be publicly like upset, lost, even sexual, like in the loss of like sex. Oh my God, when my ex dumped me and I didn't get to have sex with him anymore, I was just like, what? My body was like, no.
I'm just like, thank God I don't have to have sex anymore.
But I think too that when the focus is on queer heartbreak, a lot of times it's about like some kind of somebody found out about the relationship.
Word.
It does. Like, because I feel like that's a really trope to go to. Somebody found out you're gay and now your relationship can't work, right?
Right.
Exactly. Whereas like the fallout from it, like you're talking about, like the actual manifestation in your body, like that is something that I think is.
Oh, when you do things to break up a relationship that you love, like when I've participated in what ended my last relationship, that is way worse than anything that could have happened, because I felt like I carried what I did, and I couldn't blame it on anybody else. Like, it was just the two of us. It was not our families. They were supportive. They loved us. It was just us. We fucked it up, man. We fucked it up. And I cannot tell you how much that still hurts. Like, that I did this. Like, I fucked it up.
And that, like, it's like the line from the Blow song, where it's like, just because it's real don't mean it's gonna work.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So real. And at the core of it, when you're in the middle of fucking it up, knowing that you're fucking it up, and you're like, I know that I am making the wrong decision. I am doing the wrong thing to make this work.
To not fuck it up,
and
you guys.
I am fucking it up.
Oh
my God. Well, here's to not fucking it up.
To not fucking it up.
Not fucking it up in 2018.
We're going to continue to fuck it up.
We will fuck it up. But also not putting up with bullshit. This is Joe. Don't listen to me. Listen to these thoughts. Don't put up with bullshit. Don't put up with bullshit men. Don't put up with cheating men.
Call it when you call it.
Just fucking walk the fuck out of the relationship when you need to. Get on an airplane. Go to LA.
And on, but
wade in the water.
My 2018 honest resolution was to just be nicer to people who like me.
Oh, Teebs.
Yeah.
which that requires a lot of vulnerability. And that's, yeah. Teebs, you're so good at certain types of vulnerability, but that's one that's like really hard for you.
It's impossible.
Yeah. It's your least favorite thing.
Yeah, it really is.
Being nice to people who like you is your least favorite
thing. Oh my
God.
One time Tommy had to like man the merchandise booth for our podcast to just like sell merch, and he had to engage with strangers who liked our podcast.
He pretends we don't have fans because it's the only way he can make the show.
And so I remember going back and checking in on him, being like, oh, how's it going? Like, are you what's going on? And he goes, I hate this. I this is terrible. I want to die.
Not because he hates you. He loves you. It's just like, it can be hard. Like, I feel awkward sometimes.
Thank you, our PR team, Dennis.
Yeah. Just for the record, so that people know. Yeah.
That's great.
I was just going to say, I think that one of the things that I'm learning for this year is patience, like being patient enough to like wait and see and learn about myself and learn about the other person and learn about what this can be is like a very important thing for me.
I just want to be married yesterday.
I'll learn that.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. not this year for me.
That's a 30s life lesson.
Sounds like a great note to end on.
I have that feeling like I'm full, but I could fit one more thing inside of me. Dennis knows how I feel. That means it's time for dessert. And our dessert this week is the look on people's faces when they realize I'm 34 years old. Just kidding.
Oh my God, literally last night we were at a club and they were like, you're 34 years old. And then Tommy was like,
No, our dessert this week is actually Living Single, the
yes!
mid-90s sitcom that took place in Brooklyn and loosely followed the lives of six friends. That was actually like on Thursday nights, it was like Martin, Living Single, and New York Undercover. And those Thursdays were the antidote to NBC's all-white Friends block Thursdays.
Oh my God, so true.
Yeah, they were.
And oftentimes, you know, it's like it's got a similar format to lots of other shows that follow the lives of like four women and then the sort of men in their orbit, right? So like a Golden Girls or like a Sex in the City, but yep, of course friends. Like yeah, girlfriends, exactly.
Or just Friends, I mean. Friends the TV show.
Gotcha.
Never heard of it.
Immediately wanted to switch that title. And also just like, first of all, Maxine Shaw, attorney at law, is one of the best characters on television in history. Fight me.
And in the history of television. 100%.
And also, they like it taught me sort of certain models of success, right? Because like Khadijah was in the publishing industry, played by Queen Latifah, and I always wanted to be. I looked to her as like a model for somebody for a career and a life that I wanted. Yes, and I'm living my living single life.
You
right
are
now.
Living your living single life, Teebs. Oh my God!
And
yeah.
Living single came before Friends, right? It was kind of it was the model for shows like that to exist. Wow.
It was actually the model for Friends. Lauren, I think it was out, someone asked Lauren Michaels something like, "If you could have one show that's on television that is like done by somebody else on a different network, whatever, like what would it be?" And he was like, "Living Single." And then a year later, Friends was born.
Ooh.
Just saying, like facts. Yeah, Living Single was spectacular.
What did it mean to you, Dennis?
Living Single was amazing because it was one of the earliest representations that I had of like young black people in the city, like doing their thing, living their life, being happy. It wasn't fraught with racial trauma. It wasn't like it wasn't like they were like in the hood or anything like that. They were just like normal, like working young people in the city. And you just didn't see that. And so at the time that Living Single was on, that's what my sisters were doing in their lives. Like, they were actually in New York. And one of my sisters might have been in Jersey at the time, but they were, like, working in New York. And so what was amazing for me is that I saw that, and then I knew it wasn't, like, mythical. Like, it wasn't just a product of TV because my sisters were doing that. So, like, I would go visit them in New York, and I'd be like, oh, my gosh, we're, like, living the Living Single life right now. My sister lived in Brooklyn. It was the best thing ever. And I saw myself in all of those characters in different ways. But
did you feel like it let you get to know your sisters as well? Because you were, like, in Ohio in this life that, like, wasn't like their life, and the show kind of allowed you to see what their life might be like.
Yeah, it gave me context, and it gave me a visual for what they were doing. I could imagine all of those things. I imagined them having those conversations. I imagined them walking by those Brooklyn Browns. They were like, we want to one day like own a Brooklyn Brownstone. Right. And I knew what that was because I saw it on Living Single before I ever saw one in real life.
And I just love when culture is like aspirational, but not in ways that are just like hyper-capitalist. Like, I want to own this thing. I want to do this thing. It's like, I want to have a life that looks kind of like this. And like when you're really outside of, like when you're queer and when you're young and maybe when you're poor or a person of color, it's like you're kind of outside of maybe a lot of things that you might want your life to look like. like, yeah. and culture sometimes can come in and just be like, oh, it can actually be kind of like this.
Like, or it can totally desensitize you and you're like, I can totally write one column a week and then pay for an apartment that has multiple rooms. Yeah, Sex and the City.
And we had been talking before about like ideal relationships. And I remember the relationship between Kyle Barker and Maxine Shaw. At first of all, it was a slow burn. It took seasons
Dennis
for them
almost spit out his
to
coffee.
Actually like be together. But they were, they, but the thing is like their relationship hinged on their disdain for each other.
Wow. Like, oh my God. The ultimate relationship.
Yes. And they were like constantly always shade. Bickering at each other in person and being like, yeah, like half of the jokes on that show were jokes that Kyle or Max made at each other.
Right. Yep.
And, but then in secret,
they loved each other.
They loved each other.
Oh my God.
And their love story, it was like, for me, the greatest arc of that show.
And that is so what love is like. You know someone so well, and there are things in them that drive you batshit crazy, but those are secretly the things that if they were gone, you would miss like a motherfucker, and you do. Mm-hmm. You know, so like that is such an accurate portrayal of like, of the messy intimacies mm-hmm. of what love is like.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that the presence of that relationship on that show was so important and so critical because there was another relationship on that show that was Sinclair and Overton. Mm-hmm. And like, Sinclair and Overton are great and they're cute and they're a little bit simple and they had a sort of simple love story.
LMAO.
That's a very polite way to like say that. But they had this very simple, straightforward love story that was very romantic and very sweet. But to see both of those different kinds of relationships yeah. playing out in the same context was, I think, hugely important for anyone who was a younger person watching this show growing up.
So good. Back on Netflix now.
It is
Hulu. Can we have a slumber party and I'll watch it together?
Yes. Yeah,
I'll make Rice Krispie treats.
That sounds great.
I have definitely my top five episodes, but one of them is, it has to do with Kyle and Max, and it's the episode where she fully realizes that she's in love with him and he's like singing My Funny Valentine and she's like losing her shit and like eating her napkin and like overheating and like cannot calm down. And I was like, I want to know what that love is.
Oh wow. Yes. That's so good. Such a good dessert. I love it.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our partnership with Into, an online magazine for news and culture. What are you into? Head to intomore.com each week for a lovely little love letter from your favorite love and love lorn thoughts.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Our engineer this week is Claire Morrison at Bedrock LA, and our producer is the sweet as a warm cinnamon bun on a bitterly cold winter morning, Alexandra De Palma. I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can't find me on the internet anymore, but you can find me in a bookstore.
I'm Joseph Osmondson. I have a book out. Cop it. It's, you know, kind of okay. It's www.josephosmondson.com.
And I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on any social media you want.
I'm Dennis Norris II, and you can follow me on Twitter at the Earl Denden, TheEarlDenden.
I hate that.
Catch Food for Thought on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your golden audio shows. Subscribe, rate, and review us 5 stars on iTunes, or Joe will sob uncontrollably, his tears causing a flood not seen since the days of Noah.
That's gonna happen anyway.
Find us on Twitter and Facebook as @FoodForThoughtPod and on Instagram as @GaySlutsWhoRead. Sign up for a newsletter for episode insights, reading lists, and extra delectable content.
I hate you.
At foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics to thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye. See you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more. Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.